Right, let's get started. Good morning, everybody. My name is Peter. I'm a partner with Employment and Business Immigration Specialist Law Firm MPM Legal. Delighted as ever to be joined by my colleague Adrienne. Good morning, Adrienne.
Morning, everybody. I'm going to apologize in advance if I have a coughing fit in the middle of it. I might have to go on mute, but bear with me.
You've been suffering a little bit this week. I think it's
It's back to
time of the
school,
year, isn't it?
cold time. That's all. I
Back to
think a lot of
school.
people have. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's doing the rounds. I'll do my best not to start coughing as well, because you know both of us coughing on this webinar. Welcome to this second session of what I think is series five now of Employment Law 101. As always, this session is being recorded. A couple of housekeeping matters. I will open up the chat so everybody can put a chat message on the right-hand side, because that's been quite popular. And also, if you've got any questions, please just use the Q&A function down at the bottom, because that just helps us to manage the flow of questions for us that are coming in. This session is being recorded. You can catch recordings on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts. Last week's session, which is looking at collective consultation and redundancy situations, is live at the moment. You get the video recordings on our website, MPM Legal. Right. That being said, what are we looking at today, Adrienne?
Well, we've got a three-parter essentially. So we're going to do a little bit of an update on where we are with the Employment Rights Bill. We're going to talk about a re recent unfair dismissal case involving an employee who swore at their boss, and another unfair dismissal case around online shopping during working hours. So first things first, if you could all just please log out of your Amazon accounts and your M&S accounts, that would be marvelous.
Yeah, particularly if
Just
my
kidding. Yeah.
employer's installed spyware,
Yeah,
track
exactly.
your keystrokes.
So
Okay.
let's kick off with
Yeah, let's back
Employment
to
Rights
it.
Bill. Yeah.
So we wanted just to do a short update on where we are with the Employment Rights Bill. We did a deeper dive in July, I think early July. So we've got an episode up. However, since then, there have been a couple of developments in as much as the bill has ping-ponged between the House of Commons and the House of Lords. So it went up to the House of Lords. The House of Lords debated all sorts of amendments, and a lot of these have been reported, and I've read quite a few articles in the last couple of weeks that were written almost as though these changes were actually going to happen and that there was a prospect of the legislation fundamentally changing. But it's absolutely not the case. So basically, the Lords debated a bunch of amendments. They sent the bill back to the House of Commons, and the House of Commons have just rejected all of the non-government amendments from the Lords. So anything that wasn't proposed by Labour in the House of Lords has been rejected. What it means now is the bill goes back to the House of Lords, but following parliamentary convention, what should happen is the House of Lords will just nod the bill through, and we can expect royal assent, which is the bill coming into act, around October time. Parliament's in recess at the moment because it's party conference season. There was some debate about whether the Employment Rights Bill was going to get enacted ahead of the Labour Party conference, which I think starts next week. That isn't going to be the case because I believe Parliament's in recess now. So we're looking at an October implementation of the Act. Now, just to give you a flavour of some of the things that were debated in the House of Lords and what have been bounced back. Unfair dismissal protection. So obviously we know this is like one of the biggest reforms. It's bringing that 2 year qualification period for unfair dismissal rights down to day one of employment. My personal opinion on that, I think it's ridiculous. When I say it's bonkers, really, having a day one right for unfair dismissal, but that's just my personal opinion. I know that other people will disagree with that. The House of Lords, maybe they're slightly on my side because they pr debated a 6 month qualification period, so bringing it right down to the minimum that it was, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, perhaps now, maybe even longer. The Commons have said no. We're absolutely not going to agree to that. Our manifesto was day one rights, and that is what it's going to be. So, for you employers, it means you've still got to be preparing for probation periods no longer being that safe zone that they are at the moment, and you're no longer having that luxury of a 2 year qualification. Another change was in respect of a duty on employers to offer guaranteed hours contracts to qualifying workers, and the House of Lords wanted to amend it to say, well, we just want to give employees a right to request those guaranteed hours rather than an obligation on the employer to actually offer them. And again, the Commons have said no, that's not good enough, so gave that short shrift. Ditto for short notice shift cancellations and standing people down. The Lords said, well, let's define what short notice means for the purpose of the legislation, and let's say it means 48 hours. And the government have said, no, we don't like that either because it presupposes consultation requirements. So that one's gone. Another quite interesting one was companions at hearings. And, something that we get asked quite a bit is so and so wants to bring someone other than a trade union rep or a colleague. They want to bring their brother or sister or best mate along to a hearing. Can we let them? The House of Lords wanted to say, well, let's let an extended right apply so people can bring representation in. In my mind, that would be an absolute nightmare scenario to deal with. I mean, can you imagine having like a lawyer rock up with somebody when you're trying to conduct a disciplinary hearing?
And they probably thought about that because in certain public sectors, rights of appeal, etc., people are allowed
It does, yeah.
legal
I think if
representation. Yeah, because I've
you're
done it.
strike off or something in a regulated
Yeah,
capacity.
exactly. So,
But in terms of those jobs that are not regulated,
normal day-to-day stuff.
you can imagine how difficult it would be to try and arrange a disciplinary hearing. It'd just be an absolute nightmare. So that's been bounced as well. In terms of industrial action ballots, they were looking at retaining the 50% turnout threshold in terms of votes. So that's relevant to anybody here that comes from a unionised workplace. It's all about what percentage you need in terms of a ballot for industrial action. Again, the government have confirmed that they're going to remove that 50% turnout threshold. The net effect of that is going to be it's going to be easier for unions to get that ballot over the line in terms of taking industrial action. And whistleblowing, actually, the Lords wanted to extend whistleblower protection, but the government have rejected it, interestingly, on the basis that what the Lords were proposing was inadequate. So whether or not there's going to be more movement in that space in the future remains to be seen.
I mean, just one thing I just wanted to cover off. So, from a practical HR perspective, what we've talked about is the two biggest shifts being one, day one unfair dismissal rights and the guaranteed hours. But we've still got this probationary period bit, haven't we, where there's going to be
Absolutely.
some kind of process. So just to clarify, that's still there, and we're still waiting for detail on what that might look like, and in terms of, a sort of short form process, something that's easier to manage. So that is still there, as we've talked about before. So I think that's an important point to note, and that's what we've been telling you all to sort of look at in terms of how you manage your probationary periods now, so that you can hit the ground running, so to speak.
I mean, as you can imagine, we're talking to lots of companies about what sort of preparation can we do. And, the big focus, I think, has to be on getting your house in order in terms of probation periods and your structure and methodology around that. And there's a big education piece and training piece for managers around really hammering home the importance of it. I mean, it's something that's been more relevant than you would first think recently, because there's been this trend of employees really pushing back who are short service and being dismissed and putting in data subject access requests and putting in grievances, just appealing decisions anyway, and just trying to make life generally uncomfortable for an employer. So, the more employees who are on the front foot have kind of been getting ahead of this already, but there's a real opportunity. But we know that this act is coming in; it's going to come in the next month or so. So we're really getting to the sharp end of it. One more point I wanted to pick up on in terms of what the government was saying in the House of Commons is around non-disclosure agreements, so NDA reforms. Because again, that's something that's been really topical. The government minister Peter Kyle has said NDA reforms are expected very soon in relation to harassment and discrimination cases. He said that at the end of the debate when they were debating the Lords' amendments. So expect some movement in that area. Now, where's that going to be relevant for you? It's going to be really relevant in terms of settlement agreements. So I'm sure lots of you who are on the call today will use settlement agreements or will have used and experienced settlement agreements in the past. Very, very common within those agreements to have NDA type provisions. So we can expect further restriction in terms of what's said in those. And there's some debate, Adrian, I think, in terms of whether those changes are going to make it more likely that employers will settle through that means or less likely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of a bit skeptical about how useful those NDA clauses are anyway, to be absolutely fair. And I think that if we remember that the whole purpose of settlement is to close down the rights and not get embroiled in a tribunal claim that, at the moment is lasting 2 or 3 years, and God knows what that's going to be like when we see the day one rights. It could be even longer. So there's definitely still some merit in settling claims. I think there just needs to be a sort of a wider expectation and acceptance that you probably aren't going to be able to close people down from talking about it. But as we've said before on other calls, it also means that because the employer's not going to then be bound by confidentiality, they're going to have the right to rebut whatever's said if you want to end up in a very public forum having a slanging match with an ex-employee, which of course most people would say, don't bother, keep quiet, it'll be yesterday's news relatively quickly in the vast majority of cases. Obviously, if there are cases which are very much going to be newsworthy and talked about, in which case then you're looking at getting some PR in place and figuring it out that way. But I mean, yeah, I think because there's so much of this stuff going around at the moment, I'm not convinced that it's necessarily that big of a sea change. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, this is the beauty of what we do. We can wait and see and find out how it actually shakes out. But one thing is for sure, there is going to be change in that area. But yeah, question mark, will it have the impact that some commentators are saying it is going to have? And maybe it's going to be limited to a certain number of higher profile cases, which otherwise could have been
But
swept under the carpet.
I mean, but it also could be a limitation on what you can and can't do. I mean, it may be you can't go and talk to the press about it, but you can be closed down from talking to the press about it, for example, but you can't be closed down from reporting it to the authorities, etc., which is kind of the direction of travel we're already in. And so I think it's another one of, well, is it going to change that much? Probably not, but let's wait and see what the restrictions are going to look like.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of next steps then, as I've said, it's likely there's going to be royal assent of the bill in October, which is kind of going to be neatly pretty much 12 months after the introduction of the bill. So that has gone through quite quickly. So that's going to be coming very, very soon. And then within 2 months at the moment, there's slated to be lots of industrial action slash trade union provision changes. So again, relevant for those of you that come from a unionized background. But actually, going forward in terms of the wider changes to trade union recognition, for example, it is, opens the door for all employers. So those who are not currently have a recognised trade union, and there's going to be a lot more scope for that to happen when you think about a duty to notify employees of their right to join a particular trade union, for example. So there's going to be a lot of change there. Things like turnout and support thresholds, provision of information to trade unions, notice and duration of action as well. For anybody that is interested in those topics, because I appreciate it's not everybody, not all of you have recognised trade unions, we will do a separate session at some point that does a deeper dive solely on the Employment Rights Bill and the impact on collective bargaining processes, trade union recognition, strike action as well. So look out for an alerter on that. We'll give you a specific invite to that session. So that's within the next 2 months. Then slated currently in terms of changes for April 2026, we've got the increase to the protective award in terms of all of the collective consultation obligations. So those of you that are familiar with that at the moment, it's currently a 90-day protective award for a breach of the rules on collective consultation. That's going to be doubled to 180 days. I read online somebody making a very good point that if you take into account the 25% uplift for a failure to follow the statutory code of practice on collective consultation, then you're looking at a potential exposure of about 220-ish days pay per affected employee. So that's a massive increase in terms of where we are at the moment. So that's next Easter, a little Easter present to look forward to. And then we've got a bunch of family related changes as well. So essentially bringing in day one rights in respect of parental leave, paternity leave, and the ability to take paternity leave following a period of shared parental leave. So changes which are going to be really, really relevant for people in your workforce who are seeking to take family-related leave. Those changes essentially come about because of a repeal of the parental provisions, the Parent Act provisions that are set out in the Employment Rights Act. So unless there's some new legislation brought in to deal with that, there's going to be an automatic change from April next year. We're also looking at the SSP changes from April and changes in respect of statutory trade union recognition. So again, statutory trade union recognition is where we're looking at the Central Arbitration Committee. So it's when a union will apply to the CAC to ask the CAC to force an employer to recognise a trade union. I know some of you have gone through that process, but for others, you will not have done. Just before we round out on this topic, what's going to happen now? I mean, again, there was a lot of commentary in the last 2 or 3 weeks, partly why I wanted to talk about this today, because Angela Rayner has left her ministerial post, as has Justin Madders. They were the kind of two MPs that were really, really driving this employment rights bill forward. So this was their baby. And the commentary has been around, well, to what extent are the government going to actually water down these proposals? Takeaway message is not very much that we can see so far. So certainly not in terms of unfair dismissal protection. What's going to happen now is an awful lot of consultations, though. So there's going to be consultations on day one unfair dismissal rights to look at things like how does it interface with the ACAS Code of Practice? What does the modified process look like? What does this new compensatory regime look like as well? Because there's going to be a different approach to compensation for people who are short service. So what you can expect is a whole bunch of consultation that apparently is going to be happening very, very soon. Now, the government's really got to get its skates on here because there isn't very much time to implement all of this stuff and get the regulations in play. But you, as employers, you're going to have the opportunity to give your feedback, maybe through a professional body, maybe through a trade organisation. You can just feedback directly to the relevant government department as well. But you've got a voice in this. So the government will publish responses. All I can say is get involved in those consultations if you get the opportunity to do so, because there's going to be a lot on all of these 28 key provisions.
For me, I don't think there's a day that goes by without me reading something in the press with employers and employers associations being absolutely up in arms about this day one right. So I think, I think that if the consultation truly is consultation, then this is this opportunity to push back. And but I mean, I'm not hopeful either. But it does seem to me that a common sense attitude in order to save, like, the recruitment industry, get rid of the hiring freezes. I mean, you see small companies going, I'm just not going to employ anybody. It's going to massively impact on growth, according to what we're reading, etc. So yeah, do get involved, do have your say, and yeah, let's see where it goes. But
I mean, I think we're seeing it a little bit in terms of conversations we've had with different businesses where, some are actively looking at recruiting in lower cost jurisdictions, basically.
well, any other jurisdiction at the moment,
It feels that way.
yeah,
Okay, so I
right.
think just to round that off, a lot of change happening. We're really, really at the sharp pointy end now. We'll keep you informed in terms of those changes as they come through. But as always, any questions, just give us a shout and do go back and listen to those previous episodes on Spotify because there's some useful nuggets in those. Right, something a little bit more lighthearted, I think.
Well, I suppose it's light-hearted. It's a bit more sort of back to basics, in line with the Employment Law 101 stuff, and we're talking
Yes.
about an unfair dismissal case. Again, what I call a clickbait case, because when you read the headlines, it's quite grabbing, and you're like, "What? What does that mean?" So, a headline in this case might have been "Fired for calling your boss a dickhead is unfair," and then immediately I'm thinking, "Let's have a look at that." As always, so this case involved a claimant who called her manager and another director of the company dickheads and got fired on the spot as a result. And the judge basically said, no, it's not an it's an unfair dismissal, right? So you kind of think, okay, so that's behavior perhaps that you wouldn't expect to see in the workplace. And as I said, my ears prick up on these things. So I'm like, right, let's have a little dive into this and see what's gone on. So I'm going to take you through, because actually it's quite a good reminder both of what you're meant to do now, but also in particular coming in with these day one rights as well. And a lot of this, you're probably going to listen to me go, well, that's bloody obvious. And of course we wouldn't do anything like that. So let's just break it down. So the starting point in any dismissal case is, first of all, to pin your colours to the mast and decide what is the potentially fair reason we're talking about. So in this case, calling your bosses a dickhead, and I would say actually when I read the report, there was some debate over whether it was knobhead or dickhead. Just thought I'd throw that in for a little bit of colour. It's a misconduct. And the judge went, yep, yeah, absolutely. This is potentially a misconduct issue. So the employer ticked the box to start with in terms of identifying a potentially fair reason as the starting point. The problem is what happened next. So, on the face of it, you might say, okay, this could potentially be gross misconduct, not an appropriate way to behave. But what if I then tell you that the context was that it was said in the context of a heated conversation where she found out that that her role was potentially under review. She found some paperwork which was looking at the costs of her role, et cetera, all the rest of it, and she was pretty upset. So we've got some context there. If I then tell you that she was fired right there and then, and basically told to leave in possibly one of the rudest manners that you can imagine. I'm not going to say the words on a recorded webinar. No investigation, no invite to a disciplinary, no right to be accompanied, etc. You can then start to see how the decision that this was an unfair dismissal was reached, right? Because procedurally, that's just driving a coach and horses right through it. I'll just add as well that it turns out that all the parties were related. It was a bit of a family business. So if you take all that into consideration, it does put a completely different light on it. And the judge was very, very critical of the way the case was defended and found that the claimant was actually really consistent in her evidence. The output was no process. So we all know that a case can be an unfair dismissal on process alone, irrespective of the substantive reason. And this was absolutely right. You can't fire somebody on the spot like this. And I know you all know that. Second of all, the judge said that the one-off comment with no previous warnings on record, etc., in the circumstances just didn't meet the threshold for gross misconduct. There was also the situation that their own policy said that the claimant would be entitled to receive warnings first for any insulting behaviour. So not only hadn't they followed a dismissal process, but they hadn't followed any kind of misconduct process at all, taking into consideration their own documents. So, sort of put like that, you can see where it's a total disaster. So, what's the situation here? Well, it's remembering that when it comes to dismissing somebody, no knee-jerk reactions. Okay, not just in terms of in the heat of the moment, right there and then, but say for example, it gets reported to you as HR, somebody's called their manager a dickhead. You might go, well, we can't have that. That's absolutely gross misconduct. And already you're launching yourself down a route that is perhaps blinkered. And it's a question of going, okay, it might be gross misconduct. Let's take a closer look. Because fairness dictates that there needs to be a thorough investigation. We need to ask what's the circumstances. We need to talk to people, witnesses, etc. All of that good stuff that I'm sure most people do. But I think it's really important to know that the launch pad of this one here, don't be blinkered in your approach, because we need to make sure that we're looking at this fairly at the start. Now, I would say in this situation, and I know we bang on and on and on about process, even with these short service dismissals that Peter was talking about, there is no doubt that tribunals are swayed by the process that an employer follows. We've had short service cases where, even though the claimant doesn't have the right to bring unfair dismissal, the tribunal is very interested in what dismissal process has been followed. Even if we turn around and go, well, we didn't follow a process because they don't have 2 years' service, there's a little bit of frownage that might go on, shall we say, in that situation. So I do think that actually getting used to following at least some kind of process, some kind of fairness, is super important, because it puts you in the mind of the judge, if you do end up in a tribunal, as being an employer that at least has acted fairly, irrespective of whether there's service or not. So I think that's kind of super helpful. And certainly from our perspective, when it comes to claimants who are bringing discrimination claims alongside trying to shoehorn some kind of dismissal claim, it also helps you to have records of the actual reason for the behaviour. So if somebody says, I was fired because of my disability, or I was fired because I'm a woman, you know, you've gone through the process, you've got the documents to demonstrate that you've explored the reasons why. You've said, right, this is potentially misconduct. Here's the investigation. Here's the evidence that we found. And all of that actually not only serves to tick the box for process, but also demonstrates to the tribunal what reason was in your mind at the time and can steer away then from a positive finding of discrimination. So lots of things to pull out of this case. It turned out to be quite expensive for them because, in actual fact, the tribunal awarded her, I think, what amounted to almost a year's gross pay. So she got 30K. So a fairly expensive reminder not to act in the heat of the moment, but more importantly, follow your processes.
A chunky amount of money to pay out, and you think
Yeah.
about the business inconvenience and the publicity, even though apparently all good publicity is all publicity is good publicity. I'm sure they probably
Yeah.
didn't want this focus and articles in The Guardian as it was reported.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that, I mean, it's something that we see fairly frequently, nice policies that are then not followed, and they're either not followed because the managers are not aware of them or they don't understand them. Or there's been an actual decision not to follow a process. I mean, if it's the latter, then fair enough. You can make a calculated decision about do we want the hassle of following a process and we'll just take it on the chin, if something follows. But the former, in terms of just I didn't have an awareness of this was what I was supposed to do, isn't great, really, because it just opens you totally to this sort of exposure, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's quite a neat segue into our final case. And I'm really aware of the time, so I'll go through this one relatively quickly. But yeah, that whole awareness of making sure that you've got policies is important. And in this particular case, making sure that you can demonstrate that you've brought those to the attention of the employee, because this one was about a code of conduct, and the employee went, well, I didn't know anything about it. And the respondent wasn't able to demonstrate that, A, it was actually in place at the time, and B, that they'd sent it to the claimant. But this is the online shopping one. And the lady in question here was fired for basically spending too much time at work on a work computer doing personal shopping. Now, the employer put some spyware on the computer and was tracking her activity. And I'm not even going to go into right now whether or not that's allowed, GDPR, blah, 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 all the rest of it,
ICO,
but ICO, all of that stuff. But this case is also relevant when we're talking about service. So the risk of being a broken record, there is a little bit of a twist in this case because the employer, again, didn't follow a fair process. They believed that this employee didn't actually have the 2 years service, and therefore that's why they didn't follow process. Now, oh, again, not going to go into a massive detail as to why they thought that, but just to say that it involved she had previously worked at a first incarnation of a company. Then there was some dispute over whether there was a TUPE transfer, whether she'd had a break in employment, and all that kind of shizzle. But the judge ultimately decided at a preliminary hearing that she did have 2 years service. And of course, at that point, the respondent would know that their defence to unfair dismissal is probably dead in the water because they'd operated on the basis that she didn't. But coming back to sort of like the material part of it, the online shopping bit, again, mentioned the policy, employee didn't know, but it comes back down to fairness. Now, in this case, there was no investigation. So having put their spyware on the computer and pulled out a bunch of results, which showed that, you know, what I mean, I didn't even think she spent that much time on it, to be fair. But had they had an
That in comparison with your own personal
I
shopping
don't know
habits.
what you're talking about. No, so I mean, they didn't talk to her about it. If they had talked to her about it, that she would have been able to tell them, as she told the tribunal, that a lot of the stuff that they were accusing her as being personal was actually work tasks. And it came down to actually there was a very minimal part of what she did as was being personal. She also put forward evidence to say that everybody in the very small business used their computers for a certain amount of personal stuff. And again, it's about the presentation. Very much believed the claimant, albeit saying that some bit, but certainly believed the claimant more than the respondent due to lack of process, lack of documents, lack of evidence, all of this stuff, it colours the minds of the tribunal. So, that failure to have an investigation could have meant a very different outcome. We've got the issue around the 2 years service, and at the end of the day, he didn't even find that there was anything that could amount to misconduct in this context. And context is everything. They thought they were firing her before she got to 2 years service. A family member working for the company had somebody else coming over from overseas, and they thought they could basically boot this lady out and bring in their own family member to replace her, and that was found to be the real reason for dismissal. So many different reasons why you need to be following a fair process, just sort of highlighted in those two cases.
Yeah, good little reminders, and they're just headline grabbing cases, those two. There's been a lot of chatter about them because of that, but underpinning it all, just some really, really basic concepts in terms of procedural fairness, right? But yeah,
And what and
certainly
how a
reminders.
tribunal will look at them,
Exactly, absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely. You mentioned 2P. That's a nice segue into our session in 2 weeks' time. So we're going to be back in 2 weeks at 11 o'clock live. Something we get asked a lot about, 2P transfers. So we're going to do a session on 2P transfers. So if that sounds of interest to you, because you've been doing some outsourcing, you're doing some in-housing, you're involved in different contractual changes, or maybe you've got some business change process where you're going to be acquiring a company, selling part of your company, whatever it is, maybe you're just curious about 2P. Come and join us in 2 weeks' time. You'll already be registered for the session because you're here today, but do join us. Just two things I wanted to ask you for help with. Number one, if you enjoy these sessions and you think anybody else you work with would enjoy listening to them, or anyone you know in the HR community, please do spread the word about them. We want to get that message out there. Secondly, if you're listening to this on Spotify, as I know that a lot of you do, please just take a moment to give us a rating, because that really helps us out as well. So if you're listening on your mobile on Spotify, just give us a rating in terms of this session. Thanks so much for joining us. We will be back, as I say, in 2 weeks' time looking at 2P, and we look forward to welcoming you then. In the meantime, have a good weekend when it arrives. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.